Hey, Mujer, it's Micaela, host of the Fearless Mujer podcast. What is the Fearless Mujer? It is a space for the mujer who ever felt rejected, misunderstood, and without a seat at the table. If you are ready to renew your mindset, let go of old versions that no longer serve you, and you're ready to be inspired to fearlessly pursue the dreams on your heart, then I invite you for a virtual cup of cafecito. You can listen to the Fearless Mujer on Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, and wherever you podcast.
What's up, everybody? We hope you guys are having a great day so far. Welcome back to another episode of the Scaredy Cats podcast. We are your hosts, Sway and Liz, and if you're new here and love true crime, scary stories, and more, make sure to add us to your favorites and tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a brand new episode.
And if you guys want to stay up with our latest, don't forget to follow us at Scaredy Cats podcast, and that's Scaredy Cats with the K.
Yes, guys, and before we get into today's episode, we changed up our logo. We have a new logo for 2023.
It was honestly, like, so awesome to see, like, the process, because he kind of like updated us throughout the whole thing, but it was just crazy to see the final product.
And it was really cool. The guy that designed it for us just was very, like, you know, like, followed up with us with every little single detail, see if we like it, see what we could add and all that. And it was just overall super cool to work with him. He was from London and he goes by Sunbeam on Instagram, so make sure you guys check him out. Overall, he did such an amazing job, and he literally, like, captured what we were looking for.
Honestly, he captured and, like, just kind of, like, brought everything to life. Definitely check them out, guys. But besides that, tomorrow there is this amazing show called You coming out, and I don't know if you know if everybody's seen it, but honestly, that show is worth the binge.
I don't know what's up with that show. I think it's just because, like, the way he narrates it just sounds, it's like, it keeps you, like, intrigued. I love that show, and I'm so excited to see the new season tomorrow, so.
It's gonna be really good. I already know it because the last season blew my mind.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's gonna be really good if they're doing a part one and part two.
True.
Besides that, guys, I don't know if you guys heard the news. I'm pretty sure if you did, if you live in the U.S., about the Chinese balloon. They were calling it the Chinese spy balloon, which was very creepy because when the picture first came out, I thought that little, like, satellite looking thingy was the balloon. I thought the thing in the back was the moon. Until people were, like, showing videos, and the big thing that I thought was the moon was actually the balloon.
I don't really know what's necessarily confirmed, but I've seen that it was just them, like, testing, you know, like, getting data, however you say it, for their weather and stuff, and it somehow just got rerouted, and it just went towards, like, the US, I guess, and it kind of just got lost. So that's what I saw it was about. But then I've seen it's a spy balloon. I've seen people saying that it could be, like, a UFO, like, a, you know, and it's just out in the blue. So I don't know. Remember, I don't know what it is.
Like the balloon from Nope, when it turned into, like, a balloon type thing at the end.
Oh my god, that, honestly, seeing that, like, gave me, like, such anxiety, because I'm like, creepy. Gosh, no, if I ever saw that in real life, no way.
Yeah, but I've seen mixed reviews too. I've seen that it's causing tension between United States and China. Who knows, but at the end of the day, they shot it down. Yeah, it was just overall creepy. It was a huge balloon in the sky. I don't know what it has to do with it, but there's a bunch of rumors circling on about it, and a bunch of rumors circling around Jay-Z and Beyonce from their ex bodyguard.
Guys, I used to be a diehard Beyonce fan, and lately, like, after the last episode we did about, like, you know, celebrities and stuff, it just kind of made me feel weird about supporting her in a way, I guess. I don't know. I just feel very weird about Beyonce right now. So, like, and I love her. Like, I literally, like, I even have, like, the Ivy Park shoes that you got me. I, like, got socks, a lot of her merch. Yeah, I got everything. But, like, now I'm just kind of like, I see her in a different light. And then after this bodyguard, like, how he was saying that they kind of do anything to get what they want for
what
success.
What was he saying, like, in specific again?
That they were the ones who undid Carrie Hilson's career. And they kind of, like, step on everybody's toes, and they'll do anything, you know? So it made me feel like, you know, a little bit about the Illuminati and everything. I don't know.
There is those certain celebrities that give me that vibe, especially Jay-Z. There's just, like, that vibe of me that there's so many people that say he's part of, like, the Illuminati. To me, like, okay, it's a lot of people that say he's involved in it. There's a lot of people saying that Beyonce's involved with it. There's numerous employees that have came out and said that against Beyonce, first saying that she was into witchcraft, Illuminati, and then the ex-bodyguard. So I don't know, but yeah, there is those certain celebrities that give me that vibe. That's basically, you know, you catch up on your weekly like spookiness that's been going on in the world before we get into the episode. But yeah, guys, that's enough of us talking. Without further ado, let's get into today's story, which is going to be a pretty interesting one because it's the first ever murder that happened through mail in the United States. And it all starts with a woman who goes by the name of Cordelia Brown, who was born in 1854 in Kansas City, Missouri.
1854 sounds like a long time ago.
It does.
But like when you say it,
it sounds like a long, long time ago. But while researching more about her, there wasn't much like to say about her younger years or how life for her was growing up. But on September 26, 1872, when Cordelia was 18 years old, she decided to marry a 33-year-old man who went by the name of Welcome Botkin. This dude's name was Welcome.
That sounds very interesting.
I've never heard nobody's name.
Yeah, welcome. Welcome. Yeah. When you say, like, when he says thank you, you're welcome. Welcome.
Or when you're, or when
you're welcome, welcome.
When they're welcoming, like welcoming him in. Like,
welcome, welcome, welcome. Yeah.
That just sounds so weird.
It does.
But yeah, he was a very wealthy grain worker, and Welcome and Cordelia would later have a baby boy named Beverly in 1874, and they lived a regular life in Kansas City until the 1880s, where Welcome was offered a new job as a salesman for the Armor Packing Company, which meant they would have to move all the way to Stockton, California.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever heard anybody named Cordelia either. Very interesting names, that's for sure. However, let's talk a little bit about Cordelia. So before things started to get any crazier, Cordelia was described to be a short and a hefty woman, and a lot of people said that she wasn't the best looking, but to her, she thought otherwise. She believed that she was the best looking lady in the world, and she would brag to her friends that she would be photographed often, and back in the days, that was kind of like a big deal. And I mean, I guess she was really, like, she had a lot of, you know, high self-esteem. Like, she was, like, really, like, you know, she loved herself. In 1894, before Cordelia's marriage began to fall apart because Welcome stated that they just grew to become different people. Welcome was very proper and educated, and he didn't like how sexual and wild Cordelia was, and she also loved to drink and gamble. They would later end their marriage, and both of them went their separate ways, so Cordelia and her son moved to San Francisco, and Welcome stayed in Stockton where he continued to work as a salesperson. Fast forwarding to 1895, when Cordelia was around the age of 41, she still lived in San Francisco with her son, and was invited by her friend to come down to the park that was next to the Golden Gate Bridge to meet up and talk. But on her way there, she ran into a man that went by the name of John Dunning, whose bike broke down. And it was love at first sight because John found Cordelia to be completely stunning and was very attracted to her.
But the thing is that John was married and had a wife named Mary Elizabeth and a baby daughter who was also named Mary. He said that the marriage was very rocky because Mary Elizabeth didn't really like San Francisco and wanted to move back to Delaware. So him and Cordelia began to secretly hang out with each other, and you know, she would take him to bars, brothels, and before you knew it, they were getting down and dirty with each other, guys. And it didn't take long for people to see them together, and Mary Elizabeth, John's wife, ended up finding out that he was having an affair. So, you know, it was reported that Mary Elizabeth stayed with John for a little over a year before moving back to Dover, Delaware, with her little daughter Mary to live with their parents. Now, with Mary Elizabeth out the way, John was just going crazy with drinking, gambling, partying, and at this point, he got himself into a huge debt while gambling and basically had no money. But he came up with a great plan, and that plan was that he was going to steal money from his job, gamble it, and make triple the money back, and then put that money back so nobody would find out that he ever took it in the first place.
I bet you, like, in that point, he's like, yeah, I'm the mastermind right now. Like, yeah, I got this covered. Nothing's gonna happen.
He's like, this is the best plan I've ever thought about in my entire life.
That's pretty crazy, but John ended up going through with the plan and stole over $4,000 from his job, but his job found out quickly and fired him. And I mean, come on, dude. Yeah. Like, you think they wouldn't have noticed that $4,000 was missing, but now he had no source of income. Fast forwarding 3 years later to when John was offered a reporting job, which was a huge job opportunity at the time. And at this point, he sort of reflected back on his life and began to miss his ex-wife, Mary Elizabeth. Before he went away for the job, he broke things off with Cordelia and told her that he is not coming back after the assignment and that he is moving back to Delaware and trying to win back his wife. And Cordelia was like really upset with this to the point that she was crying and begging him not to leave her, which is very sad, but John was not changing his mind, so he told her how he felt and was back on his way to Cuba for his new job. But while John was in Cuba, something creepy began to happen to Mary Elizabeth. As she was living in Delaware, she began to get weird letters in the mail detailing the affair John was having in San Francisco.
Yeah, and these letters were sent shortly after, you know, John arrived in Cuba and, you know, spent a few weeks, you know, with his new job. But Mary began to grow frustrated with all these letters coming in every week that she just began to store them in a drawer without opening them. And shortly after, on August 9th, 1898, Mary Elizabeth gets a knock on the door, and when she opens the door, she finds a gift. When she opens it, she realizes that there were chocolates, and you know, she observes the box and finds a tag with it saying, "With love to you and your baby, sincerely, Miss C." Elizabeth thought this was, you know, super sweet because she remembered about a friend that she had back in San Francisco named Miss Corbelli, who worked at a school. She thought it was Miss Corbelli who sent her the chocolates, but she decided to save the chocolates for dessert. So during dinner, Elizabeth's family came over, and after they were, you know, done eating, they went outside and sat at the porch to enjoy the sunset. While sitting outside, Elizabeth remembers about the chocolates, so she gets up and grabs them and eats three pieces herself, and then offers her family some and the neighbor's kids as well because they were over playing with her kid.
Then Elizabeth's parents end up passing on the chocolate, and everyone else just devoured them. They spent a few hours outside enjoying each other's company, but out of nowhere, everyone who ate the chocolate began to get a bad stomach pain, and then they started to puke. Elizabeth's dad, who grew worried, called his private doctor, who came and ruled out that everyone had food poisoning and that it was most likely from the corn fritters that they had eaten. But Elizabeth's dad thought otherwise because he said that he had the corn fritters as well and he didn't feel anything. So after a couple hours, some of them began to feel better, but Mary and her sister were getting worse. They began to feel intense stomach pains and the puking wasn't stopping. And at the point, it didn't seem like food poisoning, so Elizabeth's father called another doctor who, once he observed, both Elizabeth and her sister said that everyone was poisoned.
Yeah, and the messed up part about this though was that the doctor said that it was for sure poisoning and that basically it was too late for him to do anything to reverse it, so he couldn't do anything to help them out. And after a few days of Elizabeth and her sister being sick, they ended up passing away from the poisoning. The father described it as a slow death because they experienced sharp stomach pains, bloody diarrhea, and they would begin to hallucinate and basically just puke their guts out. Yeah, so some pretty intense stuff right there. But after the funeral and everything took place, Elizabeth's dad grew extremely angry because he just lost his two daughters, you know, so he began to investigate who could have done this. He starts to think about the chocolate box because Elizabeth and the sister are the ones who had the most chocolate and they were the ones who died, you know. So unfortunately, the box of chocolates was still on the counter, so he took the small remains and sent them in to be studied on.
So a week or so later, Elizabeth's father gets a phone call from the scientist who was studying the chocolate remains, and he said that they came back testing positive for arsenic. And for those of you who don't know what arsenic is, it's a heavy metal chemical that is commonly used in car batteries and pest control substances, which is pretty like insane that someone put that in there, right? Yeah, in the chocolates. But crazy. While all of this was going on, John Dunning, who was still in Cuba, had no clue that Elizabeth had died. So the father decided to contact him and let him know about her death. And well, he had recently found out about the chocolates. So once John got the news, he quickly packed his stuff and flew out to Dover, Delaware. While he is flying back, Elizabeth's father is cleaning out some of her things from the house when he comes across some strange letters. Remember those letters, guys? So father ended up reading through them and found them very odd. And when John arrived at Dover, he quickly showed them to him. And as soon as John looked at those letters, he knew exactly who wrote them, and he told the father everything about the affair and stated to him that he knew whose handwriting that was, and her name is Cordelia Bodkin. It's just like, it's so terrible that this lady did this out of, like, you know, spite. Honestly though, personally, I don't think I would have ate the box of chocolates. Dang. I would have been nervous because I'm like, okay, Miss C, what if it isn't, you know, my friend? What if it's someone else, you know?
I mean, I guess this was like back in the day, so people weren't really like worried about that type of stuff. I guess it wasn't like common for people to be like getting poisoned through mail, so I understand her on that side. But even me, like me thinking about it, I don't think I would eat anything that just randomly like came to my like doorstep.
Yeah,
and it was from like somebody that I'm probably like have no clue who it is. But yeah, but Elizabeth's father then hands John the tag that was on the box of chocolates and asks him if he believes these are the same people writing it, and in fact the handwritings matched. He was 100% sure that she was the one that sent those notes and the chocolates. So the father ends up calling the Dover Police Department, and after talking to both of them, they start an investigation and would later call San Francisco Police Department, and the search for Cordelia was on. So the head chief on the case is Isaiah Lee, and he started to investigate where the box of chocolates could have been purchased from. It didn't take him long to find out where it came from because I guess those chocolates were very popular in San Francisco at the time, and they came from a shop called George Haas Confectionery, and they had four locations in town. But Isaiah Lee sent officers to every single location to investigate, and on one location an employer remembers selling a box of chocolates to a short and big lady, and this matches the description that police officers had of Cordelia.
The employee stated to the police that she clearly remembers the interaction with this lady because she found it odd that she only wanted half a box of chocolates, basically meaning that she wanted to take out some that were in there and only take half but pay the full price. The employee said that she asked her why, and the lady responded back saying that she was going to add in her own homemade chocolates to the box. And like, that just sounds weird all around, but you never know, I guess, you know. But after collecting the information, they then move on to the local post office, where where they begin to ask the employee questions. So one of them states to the police officer that he was the one that collected her package, and that he remembers because his name is John Dunnigan, and the package was sent to Elizabeth Mary Dunning, and he thought it was funny how similar the names were. He described that the lady was short and big, which matched the description of Cordelia. Now, the only thing the police department had to do is find out where the arsenic was purchased from to see if the description matches Cordelia. And this was a tad bit difficult because there were numerous drugstores around San Francisco. And after investigating a handful of them, they begin to stumble upon a drugstore which an employee remembers selling arsenic to a lady that was short and big. So with everything pointing towards Cordelia, the police ends up getting a search warrant to be able to look inside Cordelia's room where she was staying at.
Once they got to the Victoria Hotel, they quickly searched the room and found leftover paper that she used to wrap the chocolates in, along with some ribbons. After the evidence was obtained, the letters she sent to Elizabeth were sent in for investigation, and without a doubt, the handwriting matched the love letters Cordelia would write to John when they were together. So now, you know, that they have this whole case built against her. So on October 28, 1989, Isaiah Lee presented the case against Cordelia, and he was 100% sure that she would be charged with murder, but he was also worried because there were some holes that could jeopardize the entire case. First one being that not all the chocolates tested positive for arsenic, well, the pieces, you know, that the dad sent in. And second was that an autopsy was never performed on Elizabeth or her sister when they passed away. But things worked out in his favor because the judge passed on the case, and Cordelia was found in a arrested at her sister's home in Healdsburg, California, and was charged with 2 counts of murder.
But the interesting thing is that Cordelia didn't confess to doing any of this. But either way, everything led back to her being the one to murder both Mary Elizabeth and her sister. And a fun fact, well, I guess not so fun, but this was actually the first murder by mail in the United States of America.
That's so crazy. Honestly, I have never heard of this case until I stumbled upon a TikTok. Our Scaredy Cats podcast TikTok on our For You page. It's like nothing but true crime.
Yeah.
And her story ended up popping up, and I found it very interesting because I'm like, dang, that's like the first ever murder by mail. Like, that would be so cool to do a podcast episode on. But it was also difficult to find more information about her because it was just like there wasn't a lot. But you know, we basically pieced everything together and made an episode out of it, and it's just so crazy. Like, she really thought by murdering Mary Elizabeth she was gonna get back John.
That was her like, goal basically.
Yeah,
her motive.
She can't have him, nobody can.
Yeah, and it's so terrible because basically jealousy, like, you know, killed Mary Elizabeth, and it's so like it's insane.
Yeah, and you know, and the whereabouts, I don't even know like if her daughter is still alive.
Uh-huh.
the little girl Mary.
Uh-huh.
But there's like nothing about her. I couldn't find really much about the daughter, but it's just so terrible. And like I just sit and think, I'm like, she really thought she was gonna get John back after murdering his ex-wife.
Yeah. What a crazy lady. Yeah. I mean, she sounds really like insane. But overall, guys, thank you guys so much for joining us today on this spooky episode, and don't forget to follow us on all social media platforms at Scaredy Cats Podcast, and that's Scaredy Cats with the K.
Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, leave us a review letting us know what you loved about it. We would really appreciate it. But without further ado, we are out.
Peace.